Mobility Matters is supported with funding from the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration in the interest of information exchange. The NJTPA and FHWA assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of places, seen pictures of the rest. But of all the places I can't think of, I like Jersey best. Betting halls and shopping malls and good old
and welcome
Rutgers
to Mobility Matters. I'm your host, Bo Neary. I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm the executive director of Keep Middlesex Moving, Middlesex County's nonprofit transportation management association. For over 30 years, KMM has been working with commuters, employers, and local, state, and county governments to reduce traffic congestion and improve our air quality. We promote support and support carpools, information about road and transit conditions. We present safety programming for children, teens, and adults of all ages. And we play an important role in the regional development and planning for our area. Well, today marks the last show we're going to be doing for this season, and I think we've had an incredible season. The 13 shows have been very interesting, and we've had some tremendous guests. We've also had some expertise and some experiences talking about a variety of topics, but the one topic that I think is most important is transportation. And Mobility Matters is how it affects so much of our lives in terms of economic development, in terms of our environment, in terms of the economy, our education, and our entire lifestyle is based so much upon how mobility does matter to people's lives. And so we plan to discuss that today with our incredible guests that we continue to get good guests on. But at the same time, while we're talking about our guests, we want to try and look into the future and see how transportation is going to change. I believe we're at the beginning of a transportation revolution. At the start of the last century, the 20th century, I think people said we do not need to worry about buying these horseless carriages because they get stuck in the mud, there's no gas stations around, and there's no roads that are paved. So what do you want to buy a car for? Stay with your horse and your buggy because it's the best thing to do. Well, today we're looking at how things are changing. Autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, technology in our cars are changing lifestyles or demographics. It's going to make things considerably different as we go into the 21st century. And our guests today, I think, are going to be talking about that, how it changes and how it affects our environment, how it affects our economy. We're very lucky to have the executive director of New Jersey Division of Travel and Tourism, Jeffrey Vassar. We have Assemblywoman Nancy Pinkin representing New Jersey in the 18th Legislative District. Rishab Bajwa is the president and CEO of Domain Computer Systems and the executive director of Einstein's Alley, Catherine Kish, to talk about the future of transportation and how mobility matters. So let's talk about how the state is. It's important for us to get around the state of New Jersey as much as any place else and people coming to New Jersey. So Jeff Vassar, welcome you to Mobility Matters.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be back with you.
It's great. We call this the best of because we have some of the guests on coming today who we thought were the best conversationalists we've had on our show. And Jeff, you were certainly one of the best. We appreciate that.
Well, I'm honored.
When you talk about travel and tourism, I think people don't necessarily think about how much it means to our economy and how much it means to our lifestyles. I'll just go over a few numbers. There was a visitor spending worth $43 billion in New Jersey, and $7.2 billion were spent on transportation. So you understand the value of travel and tourism in New Jersey. Could you tell us a little bit more about how people get around the state and what you're doing for leading this division?
Well, we are certainly a drive market in New Jersey. We are so close to so many of the nation's largest population centers that it's the probably most convenient way for people to get into New Jersey, and that is, you know, by their car. So most of the folks that come in, you know, do come in by car, but we're trying to do more in the way of overnight motor coach marketing. So we're reaching out to, you know, some of the big tour operators to be able to bring folks in by motor coach. And, you know, that certainly will go a long way in, you know, easing traffic, giving people, you know, a better experience when they're here. And, you know, selfishly, the idea for us is to keep people here longer. So the less time they're sitting in traffic, the more time they can get to various attractions, see more things in New Jersey, and get to where they want to be. Additionally, we're going after the international market now. And, you know, so we've got 15 million international arrivals coming into Newark. And what we want to do is find an easy way and for them to, you know, get out of Newark Airport and see all that the state has to offer. And, you know, certainly the motor coach is, you know, one of the most efficient ways to do that. But we also are doing some joint marketing with New Jersey Transit. And I know you had the executive director on not too long ago, and I'm not sure if he mentioned it. But, you know, we're working on some joint promotions to, you know, kind of push the attractions that are on the New Jersey Transit rail and bus lines to get people to, you know, use the trains to, you know, get to various destinations.
Well, I know when I, in my own hometown of East Brunswick, having Exit 9 makes it a convenient spot for a lot of those coach buses of international travelers. I see those coach buses in the hotel parking lots, and I know frequently what they're doing is staying in New Jersey because it's cheaper than staying in Manhattan. And if you're coming from parts around the world, it'd be nice to be able to say, I can go to New York one day, I can go to the Jersey Shore another day, take the coach to maybe Great Adventure, one of our historic spots, another day. So I think that kind of cross-promotion will help us. They're maybe traveling around
Absolutely.
The world, but they got to see not just New York and not just Philadelphia. They want to be able to see the great Garden State.
Right. And to your point, Bill, you know, new attractions that are coming online like American Dream, you know, the huge retail dining entertainment facility that will be opening in the Meadowlands in the fall. They've made a huge push into working with New York Waterway to, you know, get folks from Manhattan to come over to American Dream by virtue of, you know, the ferries across the river, and then pick up their shuttle buses to keep people, you know, away from having to use their cars and to be able to use public transportation to get over. So, you know, they're making a big push into that as well.
Well, I think what you're bringing up also, Jeff, is important. I think when the people in New Jersey think of tourism, they think of the shore. Everybody somehow associates travel and tourism in New Jersey as the New Jersey Shore. And as great as it is, great a place to go, and as wonderful it is, the rest of New Jersey does a pretty good job, too, with travel and tourism in terms of numbers and visitors and attractions.
Well, you're right. And Bill, the charge that I have from the leader of our division, that is the Secretary of State, Tahisha Way, what she wanted us to do was to focus more on, you know, the arts and culture, the heritage tourism, the agritourism, and, you know, really focus on, you know, the wineries, the breweries, the, you know, the great restaurants that we have, and let people know about the hiking and the canoeing that they can do. And again, you know, all of the great, you know, arts and culture things we have, because, as you said, Bill, people do know all about the Jersey Shore, but we need to let them know all about the remainder of the state. And I think, you know, our efforts in our first year of the Murphy administration was good, because we had over 110 million visitors, which is a record, and the growth rate was 7.5%. So we couldn't get all of that, you know, from just people coming to the shore, because, you know, in July and August, you know, the shore is at capacity. So where did we get the additional, you know, 10 million visitors that came in? They were visiting other attractions throughout the state. So we're getting that message out to let them know all about the great things that are going on. And, Bill, in 7 short years, we will be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. And New Jersey has 140 Revolutionary War sites throughout the state. And we're going to be working over the next 6 years to make sure that they will be ready to welcome visitors and give them a great experience when they come, because we want to make sure that people know that New Jersey doesn't take a backseat to anybody else as far as our Revolutionary War historic sites.
Well, I know General Washington once said that the war was fought in New Jersey, but the paperwork was kept in Philadelphia. And I think, I know the largest battle fought in the Revolutionary War is the Battle of Monmouth, right down the road from where we're sitting today. So you're right. That's something I think somehow we paved over some of those things. I know the Crossroads American Revolution is a great group. Travel and Tourism Promotion, the Middlesex County Convention and Visitors Bureau actually is advertising in movie theaters in different cities around the country for Rutgers University football teams. If the University of Nebraska is coming, we're advertising about places to stay in Middlesex County, places to eat in Middlesex County in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Columbus, Ohio. So when the people get here, they know there's a lot to do in Middlesex County and in New Jersey to see the sights.
Right. Our job at the Division of Travel and Tourism is to promote the entire state and to, you know, remove any objections that people may have about coming to New Jersey, about, you know, it's either too far or too expensive or there's not enough to do. Our job is to make sure that people know that there are plenty of things to do that appeal to a wide variety of interests and budgets and time schedules. And then we let the individual destinations, and you mentioned Middlesex County does a great job, and Cape May County, and, you know, up in Jersey City and Atlantic City, Sussex County, they all have great things to offer, and we let them talk to the individual traveler. So our job is to bring all of the leads to all of these various DMOs, destination marketing organizations, that are through, you know, throughout our state. There's 14 of them, and to let them know that there's some great things to do and the great hotel promotions that they're offering.
Well, one of my crazy ideas is marketing New Jersey is taking the old Yogi Berra. Nobody goes to that restaurant anymore. It's too crowded. I was going to say, why don't come to New Jersey? It's too crowded. And then show the videos of sunrise on the beach and people kayaking down the Delaware River and places to go, like walking through the trails that we have and the beautiful mountains and the beautiful cities and shopping districts. But that's don't come to New Jersey. It's too crowded. I thought was an interesting concept, but right. I wouldn't advise right. using it because I don't think sarcasm necessarily works for good marketing. But other You're things right. we're talking about from the economy's point of view is we know one of the issues in New Jersey people talk about all the time is property taxes. The hotel occupancy tax is actually helping people with their property taxes more than people realize. There's the towns that have the hotels are generating a lot of revenue for their services they provide to the residents through the hotel tax. So promoting travel and tourism is good not just for the tourists and travelers, but also for our entire economy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the hotel occupancy tax is paid by the visitor, which tends to be people from out of state. And when you think about the $45 billion that of economic impact that brings in, you know, our residents, you know, should, you know, be reminded that, and here we are, I'm going to remind them that if not for that $45 billion, our taxes would go up.
Go for a break.
So the travel and tourism certainly helps, you know, pay for a lot of what we do and the fact that our taxes are, you know, would be higher if not for, you know, all of the economic impact that it brings in.
Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us. I think we try to get an overall view of how much it matters to get people moving in and out of New Jersey. It's good for our economy. It's good for our environment and certainly good for the state of New Jersey and our image. I thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to take a little break now. You're welcome to stay around and stay on the phone if you want. We're going to have a dialogue about everything else, but otherwise I understand and appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. See you next season.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right.
Think it's safe to text or talk on your cell phone while you drive? No way, no how, not ever. Nearly 6,000 people died last year from distracted driving. So forget the phone and mind the road. Learn more about distracted driving at KMM.org or call Keep Middlesex Moving at 732-745-4465. That's KMM.org. Funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Live on Sunday night, it's Bill Cunningham.
Bill Cunningham here, the great American. Every Sunday night live, a small band of renegades form around radio from Maine to Hawaii, from Alaska to Florida and all places in between to talk about the issues of the day. This Sunday night live, we talk about what was and what lies ahead. Bill Cunningham, the great American. I am a great American. Live with you every Sunday night.
Willie, Sunday night at 10 on the new Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC and WCTCAM.com.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Are you liking Keep Middlesex Moving on Facebook, following them on Twitter, and safely snapping pictures of your commute on Instagram? Connect with KMM online and find out what everyone is talking about. Download the free NJ Traffic app, register for our carpool, get your New Jersey Transit bus and transit info, and access to their fantastic giveaway programs. To connect with KMM online, log on to KMM.org and click on the Facebook and Twitter icon, funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike.
Welcome back to Mobility Matters. Today's guest, we have Jeffrey Vassar, who's the Executive Director of New Jersey Division of Travel and Tourism. We have the 18th Legislative District Assemblywoman Nancy Pinkin, Rashad Bajwa, the President and CEO of Domain Computer Services, and Catherine Kish, the Executive Director of Einstein Alley. I'm Bill Neary from Keep Middlesex Moving. I want to thank you for joining us. Our next discussion is with our Assemblywoman Nancy Pinkin. Nancy, you're representing a very highly congested part of the state in terms of Edison, East Brunswick, Highland Park, all these Metuchen especially. One of the things we're seeing that's important, I think, is how mobility matters in terms of non-automobiles. And you've been proposing legislation. You've worked with bills to promote electric vehicles, electric bicycles and scooters and types of programs that's going to get people around, not just getting stuck in traffic and some of these highways that we have, but some of the back roads and some of the beautiful places. So if you want to add to what you're doing in terms of how these benefits, what you know, the benefits are there environmentally, but what other benefits we have that's going to be great for the future of New Jersey and travel and tourism and mobility especially.
Well, Bill, the, you know, as you said, Middlesex County is congested. I myself lived for a period in Chicago and Washington, D.C. So compared to that, it's really not. Everything is relative, but it is an area that there is a lot of traffic. One thing that we have to be careful about is making sure that people that are biking, whether they're biking on a bicycle or electric vehicle, that they're doing it safely and that the everyone sharing the road in a way that is safe for everybody. So I think that's an important part. But we recently did legislation on the electric scooters, electric bicycles, and people say, well, why was that? Well, first of all, there wasn't a rule saying you could or couldn't use an electric bike or an electric skateboard, electric scooter, but some people were originally saying, well, maybe people should have to register with motor vehicles. Should they have to get a license? Should it be the same kind of license as a car? And I think it was decided that because this was a whole new area that we're not going that far. Let's not get carried away, but let's do it in a way that we can allow them to be on the road. In some towns, one of the big discussions with the legislation was whether or not the people using these scooters should be allowed to use them on the sidewalks or in the street. And it all depends. You know, we're a home rule state, and it comes down to this as well with this legislation. Some towns, it's safer to do it on the street. Other towns, it's safer to do it on the sidewalk. So it really depends on the area. And the legislation was permissive in the sense that the town could decide which way is safer. And I think these things are evolving. You hear stories across the country where an area had so many scooters, so many bicycles, that they were all over the sidewalks and people couldn't even use the sidewalks. So I think it's great that we have something new and exciting to work with. You know, people can now transition to if they want a bike to work. If they have that electric bike, it's a little bit, it's a lot more environmental, but it's, you get that extra boost so you're not like pouring in sweat by the time you get there, that you can kind of have a halfway. So it's really a great new technology. Metuchen is the first town that in our district that started with the electric vehicles, and they say it's working out great there.
Well, charging stations, I think that's what discussions are going to be about today, exactly how technology is changing our mobility, the way we're moving things around is changing so dramatically with electric vehicles, electric bikes, autonomous vehicles. The types of programs that are going to be changing in terms of mobility is, I think, is why we wanted to try to look into the crystal ball today. And I think your legislation obviously is advancing this type of program. Not everybody has a car, and not everybody wants a car. And when we looked at how transportation fits into it, we're also talking about health matters. I mean, if people can get to work without being stuck in traffic, it's good for production. It's good for their health. It's good for their body. It's good for their minds. Kids riding a bicycle to school, we know, are much better prepared to learn than they would be without it. So those type of changes that we're having are going to make some difference.
You know, I'd like to.
Thank you, Catherine. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I would like to raise the question of, you know, as we look at complete streets and thinking about all the ways that all the modalities that we're going to have, and as we think about the last mile question, so many discussions of mass transportation talk about, you know, how do we get people that last mile? How do we get them to the gathering point for mass transportation? And I think that's something that your program may be really helpful for, because, you know, we know that Uber and Lyft are looking at that that last mile. And it's interesting to think about electric bicycles and scooters as an alternative to a car for gathering people and getting them on mass transportation.
Well, the last mile is the challenge of almost all mass transportation. And mass transit is once people – I mean, that's – we're looking at demographic changes in terms of the young people today who don't want a car want to be within walking distance of,
right,
of mass transit, whether it's a train or a bus that takes them to their job sites. And so the last mile is a challenge. So an electric bike is a perfect way to look at that. I mean, there's places in different parts of the country that have bike stations, or not just bike racks, bike stations where you can actually park your bike and leave it at the train station or at the bus station, know it's safe and secure and to come back. KMN, we rent the bike lockers throughout the county. We do know some of our communities like Edison and New Brunswick, there's a 3-year wait to get to use our bike lockers where people can store their bicycle before they get on the train. So this is something that's growing. It's a problem that we have because there's not enough bike lockers, but that should be a good problem to have.
Well, Bill, one of the interesting things is that, you know, the younger people have a different thinking. They're sort of in this disposable, maybe you might say anti-consumer type of environment. So they don't feel the need to own a car. The cost of insurance in New Jersey for a young male could be $5,000, not including the cost of the car. So it's a big chunk of money, but they're okay with this, you know, renting your clothes, renting your couch, renting your bicycle. But the bicycles now, some of them that are coming out with the e-technology, they don't have to be in a station. They monitor them with a GPS. You want to stop at 123 Smith Street, you leave it at 123 Smith Street, and they know exactly where it is, and then someone will pick it up.
Well, Rashad, I know you're working with electric vehicles. You understand these kind of programs.
Oh, yeah. And electric vehicles definitively, I think, have a huge place for those of us that still want to drive. But when you get to autonomous vehicles in particular, a lot of them – for example, if you were to get a Tesla Model 3 right now, a lease, they don't allow you to buy the car afterwards because their plans are that this is going to be a fleet of autonomous vehicles waiting at hubs to take care of that last mile. So if we have a North Brunswick train station coming soon, Princeton Junction, all of that, especially in the suburbs, that last mile is everything. To your point, it's the problem.
It is the problem, but it's also the solutions with autonomous vehicles. I mean, when we're looking into the future with that, I mean, I don't believe people are going to really own a car anymore. You're going to subscribe to a car service. You're going to get a car to take you where you want to go. Since our car sits 94% of the time anyway, it'll be an interesting way. So if it's the last mile you're worried about, two or three of your neighbors might have the same last mile issue. So the car can pick everybody up at the same time and take you to the train station or the bus stop.
You know, one of the things that we talk about is that transportation is a core issue. But just what you said about how many people will have cars and own cars, that's going to change our zoning regulations for housing, because right now most communities have a very strict zoning regulation for how many parking spaces you need per unit. Well, we know that, I mean, we're at close to 8 billion people in the world, and we're headed very quickly for 10 billion people, and we're going to have to put them all somewhere. And so the question is are we building efficient housing based on the zoning regulations that say you have to provide for X number of vehicles? If we could change that zoning and make the housing more dense, because we don't need to house so many vehicles, one-on-one ownership, that's going to change the way our communities look.
I agree. Nancy, you can see how it's going to change our communities and our way of looking at moving around.
Well, Catherine, you're right. And I have already started working on legislation to start to require towns to adjust their master plans to not only to change the requirements that we have on the books now for parking, where we have these massive areas of blacktop in vacant strip malls that there's nothing on now, but also because that impact on the environment and the flooding and the drainage is huge. So we're looking at all of that and incorporating that and having the master plans be required to be adjusted for those changes that are happening.
And with autonomous vehicles, we know we can increase our parking capacity by up to 60% because the autonomous vehicles don't have to have the doors open when they're parking. I mean, you can actually park more cars in more spots because they can be so close together. So the need for parking spaces can be shrunk dramatically. The car is going to drop you off at your front door, or drop you off at the store you're going to, and then park and come back and get you.
Well, I guess you're right. The car can pull out of the spot without anyone in it.
Exactly
as well.
Right. Exactly right.
And so think about all of the impacts this has. Right now, our main office is in Cranberry, New Jersey, right near the Park and Ride on exit 8A. Huge expanse of a parking space. All it is a parking lot. And
it's overflowing. I mean, all the park and ride lots are overflowing.
And it's overflowing. So not only do you have an impact on that space, that physical space, but all of those cars are sitting there all day long doing absolutely nothing. That somebody has invested a lot of money into an asset that 90-95% of the time is literally just sitting there. And so, you know, a lot of the evolution of our times right now and these industries that are getting displaced is because they're noticing these huge wastes of resources, whether it be parking space or whether it be cars sitting on those parking spaces. And I think those wastes, those inefficiencies are what the millennials or the younger generation are waking up to. Look, you know, we don't have to live in the world that everyone else designed for us. We get an ability to define what our future looks like. And we think our parents were not that smart for having three cars for two drivers. I actually think we could have 50 drivers sharing a car or whatever the number may be.
But that's exactly what I think we're going to see happening in terms of – and also if you have a subscription to a car service, let's say it that way. So you want to just take it to your job site or take it to your transit site and go to work from there. But then on weekends, you might want to do some little off-road mountain biking or something. So you need a little bit stronger car, an SUV, to take you up into the mountain someplace.
And no matter how cool your car is – they're right. All depreciating.
They're all depreciating. So on weekends, you make sure you order your SUV to take you some places, and that's the car you can use that day because you're subscribing to a car service, and the car is going to come to provide you the transportation, not the sitting in a parking lot 94% of the time.
And, you know, we're talking about mobility, and if you think about what the future of, say, autonomous vehicles offers us, is mobility for people who haven't had mobility in the past. We think about seniors who, you know, the most difficult conversation families have is when it's time to take the keys away from mom and dad. So the idea that seniors could have transportation without the danger of driving. We talked about disabled people who have physical disabilities of all sorts and maybe are not able to drive and therefore do not have that independence. Isn't it wonderful to think that autonomous vehicles may provide that? And for the thousands of hours that parents spend ferrying children to lessons and sports and everything else, can we picture a time when the kids will just say, you know, I'm headed for soccer and I've called a car?
Well, Catherine, one of the things we've worked on legislatively recently is some of the security for that, because while we're doing that and we started to venture down that path, we saw what happened with the young woman who was killed in with a driver that was not the Uber driver that was coming to get her. And so when you're talking about seniors or kids or anybody, whether you're differently abled or whatever, what are the security protections that are in place to use those services safely? So that's, you know, as we see these changes, we have to adapt for those needs as well. It's an important consideration.
Well, I also know demographically, we're talking about millennials not wanting a car. I think Catherine brings up a good point. Us boomers who won't be able to drive a car. I mean, even my night vision is starting to go. I know that right away. And I've already told my own son, you know, it's time to take away my car keys. You better have a big stick because I'm not going to give it up that easily. But there is changes going on that way with mobility that's going to make a big difference on how we get around. And I think the concerns that I hear people talk about is about the danger of autonomous vehicles. Not mentioned the joy of driving, but the autonomous vehicles' dangers involved there, where 85% of the crashes are caused by human error, basically. A car crash is a mistake by the driver. So we hear about an autonomous vehicle in Arizona running over a pedestrian, but we don't talk anything about the 40,000 people who die in car crashes all the time. So those type of issues I think we have to take an understanding of as we look into the future. But we're going to take another little break, and we'll be back after this to talk about some of the other future things we see happening in mobility.
Pedestrians and motorists share the responsibility of keeping our roadways safe. Pedestrians must obey all signs and signals and use marked crosswalks, or they can be ticketed and fined. Motorists in New Jersey must stop and stay stopped for pedestrians in marked crosswalks. Failure to do so can result in motor vehicle points, fines, insurance surcharges, and community service. Remember, pedestrian safety is a shared responsibility.
Brought to you by the New Jersey Division of Highway Traffic Safety.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Burt Barron reminding you to join me weekday mornings from 6 to 9 for Jersey Central right here on WCTC. In addition to six traffic and weather updates every 10 minutes on the fives every hour, we have the top newsmakers, great Jersey national and international talk, great prizes, and more. Hey, if you're not listening, you're missing Jersey Hall of Fame. Fame Radio.
Jersey Central with Burt Barron. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on the new Talk Radio 1450 WCTC.
Think it's safe to text or talk on your cell phone while you drive? No way, no how, not ever. Nearly 6,000 people died last year from distracted driving. So forget the phone and mind the road. Learn more about distracted driving at KMM.org or call Keep Middlesex Moving at 732-745-4465. That's KMM.org. Funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore.
Welcome back to Mobility Matters. Today we're joined with Executive Director of New Jersey Travel and Tourism, Jeffrey Vassar, Rashad Bajwa, the President and CEO of Domain Computer Systems, Assemblywoman Nancy Pinkham from the 18th Legislative District, and Catherine Kiss, the Executive Director of Einstein's Alley. I'm Bill Neary, the Executive Director of Keep Middlesex Moving, and I want to thank you for joining us today. I wanted to introduce Rashad Bajwa, the president of Domain Computer Services. You joined us in April when we talked about electric vehicles, basically about your role in mobility with your fleet of electric cars. But since we started this discussion about the changes in technology and some of the things happening, I think it's important also to look at the economic benefits in terms of maintenance and everything else. Why would your fleet be so EV conscious and not, you know, everybody else should be doing the same thing?
Sure. Thank you, Bill. So we started down this road of electrification of our fleet back in 2012. And so a lot of things have changed in as far as electric vehicle charging options. And I'll be lying to you if I told you that I knew that the math was going to work in our favor. I didn't know. We were early adopters. We wanted to be part of progress. I had some personal reasons that I wanted to support electric vehicles. And so we started off just because Chevy Volts had a federal subsidy where we could lease them for not much more than what the Honda CR-Vs we had had prior. And so the lease was $350 per month, something along those lines. And so we said, let's give this a shot. And so then we got a whole bunch of Chevy Volts for our staff that travel around New Jersey in order to service our clients. And Chevy Volt, for those that don't know, is a plug-in hybrid. So it does electric range, but it also has a gasoline engine because we wanted we wanted belts and suspenders. We were early adopters, but we didn't want to be like, you know, bleeding edge where we have our staff stuck out in the southern parts of New Jersey without any sort of options. And so we got the Chevy Volts, and we found that our fleet, depending on how far the commute was for our staff person, they varied in range from 70 miles per gallon to 150 miles per gallon on the Chevy Volts. And it really comes down to how long your commute was. And we found those, the vast majority of those, had commutes of less than 50 miles, in which case they were electric almost all of the time. The other little benefit that we didn't realize at the time, and by the way, when we first got this, gas prices were even higher than they were now. They took a little bit of a dip. Now I think they're kind of coming back again. But we found out that electricity, and this is something we had never considered before, is dirt cheap. It is so cheap when in comparison to gasoline, and depending on who, you know, where you get your electricity from and who you talk to, you know, the argument can be made it's anywhere between 60 cents per gallon equivalent to a dollar per gallon equivalent. Whichever way you slice it, I haven't seen dollar gas Actually, I don't know if I've ever seen it in my lifetime.
I have.
Thank you, Bill. I wasn't going to say that, but, you know.
When a dollar was a dollar.
That's right. That's right. And so the cost benefits when you have, when you're literally doing thousands, if not millions of miles on the road to be able to pay 60 or a dollar per gallon versus whatever, two, three. I don't even – how much does gas cost now?
$2.51 coming up okay. Route 27.
That's right. So it's a huge benefit when it comes to just the fuel savings, and that really, really adds up. There's another huge benefit that, once again, you don't realize. We don't go to gas stations anymore. We don't drive to find the cheapest gas. We fuel, quote unquote, at the office because we have charging stations there or at home when we're sleeping. So we don't spend time going out of our way to go to fueling stations. The fueling stations are literally in every residence and potentially in every residence and commercial office in New Jersey. Look at your room right now. You have outlets. That's the same type of electricity that charges my cars. So time where we get to spend going to where we want to go as opposed to looking for fuel.
And to take them off the road to change the oil doesn't take as much time either, right?
Oh, there you go. And exactly. From a maintenance point of view, there's so much fewer moving parts that there is no oil. I mean, there's oil for lubrication, and so you still need to lubricate the moving parts. But what people don't realize is an ICE engine, internal combustion engine, which, you know, the battery people, the electric car people call it ICE, ICE vehicles. There's little explosions that happen constantly in order to move your car, and that creates a lot of wear and tear.
And a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm. And so that requires a lot more maintenance. An electric vehicle does not have that. And so the electric vehicle that I drive right now is 6 years old. It still has the original brake pads on it. And the reason why is other things like regenerative braking. We actually produce energy by recapturing the braking force without using a brake pad. So oil changes are gone. Anything with a transmission is all gone. Brake pads are a thing of the – or not a thing of the past. You still need them to come to a complete stop, but that's about it. I tell people tires, yes, you still have to go on a road. These things aren't flying yet. So that still happens. And they haven't figured out how to, you know, take water from the air. So I still got to put windshield wiper fluid in. But other than that, from a maintenance point of view, and when you're talking about fleet maintenance – when you have a whole bunch of cars that you need to maintain, that's another huge cost and also time savings. Every day that that car is in the service center is a day where we need to get another car to be able to service our clients.
And while we're talking about electric vehicles in terms of just personal cars, Nancy was talking a little bit earlier about some of the other vehicles that could also be electrified. Right now, the costs are a little bit higher, but things get cheaper as people buy them and as they get used. Nancy, you're talking about the stock of the shipping ports and everything else and the buses?
Right. Well, the Port Authority just put a number of buses into the port area. The cost of those buses is $750,000. We have a lot of people that have been advocating for school buses. Now, one of the problems with the school buses right now, there are two problems with school buses. One is the cost. Again, it's about $350,000 for a school bus, which is a lot more than a gas-fueled school bus. But you also have the children sitting on that bus, breathing in the fumes. We have very high asthma rates. And it's true in the port, there's a lot of pollution in that area due to the number of vehicles. And it's about 80% of our contribution to polluting the climate is from vehicles. So if we could, the one better way to address climate change is to electrify those vehicles. But with school buses, they're also not running all day, where if you have a commuter bus or a bus maybe in the port, they're running all day. So that electricity is constantly charging and being used, where the school bus is somewhat idle. One of the things that people are talking about going forward is how you'll use those batteries that are storing that energy on any type of vehicle, is how to use it so that when they have excess capacity, they could put it back into the grid. So these are all changes that are happening in technology. It's very interesting, very exciting. I was at a meeting yesterday talking about hydrogen and what's the possibility of using hydrogen vehicles. Now, in New Jersey, New York area, our northeastern corridor, because of the bridges and tunnels, it's not really feasible at this point to use hydrogen. So I think maybe out in the Western states, it's been a little more successful. But there's a lot happening in these changes, and certainly one of the things people can take advantage of is the rebates to make it more affordable until we get the cost lower as technology advances.
Well, the advancements in terms of buying is expensive. Maintenance, Rashad points out, is a little bit less.
Yeah, I hate to be the one to bring this up, but it was raised with me last week when I was extolling the virtues of electric vehicles. You know, we have about 270 million ICE vehicles on the road now, about one, maybe 1 million electric ones at this point. We have about 150,000 gas stations across the country, maybe 10,000 charging locations. So the question, you know, we talk about the fear of change, the fear of new technology. How do we deal with that? And then conversely, the other thing that was brought up that I hadn't thought about is, what happens if everybody in the neighborhood gets an electric vehicle? What does that do to the electrical grid? Can our current power grid take care of it if we go up to, say, 100 million electrical vehicles? That's a lot of new power drains that we hadn't thought about.
And I think they are thinking about that. I've been in meetings and sessions with public service, and they are trying to upgrade. But you're right. In the neighborhood, when there's only, you know, one or two cars being plugged in, everything's fine. The upgrade with the transformers thing, and I'll throw one more issue in that's going to be a negative that we have to look at also, is how do we pay for these roads and bridges? We do it with the gasoline tax.
Right.
And the gasoline tax is put into the cost of every gallon of gasoline we purchase. We have to also look at how many people who are driving electric vehicles now who are not going to be chipping in their share to help pay for the roads.
So all very, very good points. And I think part of what is in people's heads that is potentially holding them back from taking the step. Don't want to address all of the items right now because I think it'll be a very long, a longer conversation. But some of the key points. One is let's address cost too. A lot of people don't realize the Model T was not the first car that was invented. There was other cars that were invented earlier. Mercedes had invented a car in the late 1800s. So the Model T, what made it unique and stand out in 1905 was its cost. And so even when we first started our electric vehicle progress at Domain, meaning
Henry Ford wanted to build a car that the people building it could afford to buy.
That's right. Exactly. And so that's really the road that we're going down. Battery technology, when I first bought my first electric car back in 2012, the battery itself was worth about $50,000. Just the battery itself.
Wow.
That kilowatt pack. That battery cost, and I'm not an expert on this, but I know has come down almost half in price, maybe even more so. And that's because early adopters added their wallet to the equation, and it brought – and just mass and bringing more people to it became more mainstream, and then you have economies of scale. Those prices went down. And so number one is the cost is going to go down. The cost of these electric school buses, these transportation buses is going to go down because the vast majority of the difference between an electric vehicle and a regular vehicle from a cost point of view is the battery, period, end of story.
And in terms of cost, Tesla is investing a lot of their money in building the largest battery factory in the world in the Nevada desert. So they understand that the battery is the future for
that's
them.
Right. And the cost has to come down. And so that's why the Model 3 for Tesla is what's going to be their successor failure. They can always be a niche luxury car brand, but if they want to be mainstream, they got to have a $35,000 electric car.
You know, the improvement of the electric battery for vehicles is going to help drive the development of battery technology across the board. I mean, one of the other problems that we are dealing with is with wind and solar energy is how do you store it? Right now, we don't have good storage technology for those particular alternate, even ocean waves. I mean, there are all kinds of ways of generating power, but we can't necessarily store it properly. And if I think that with the impetus of all the interest in electric vehicles, we're going to start to see real developments in terms of battery technology that will serve us across the board.
So as a funny, maybe it's funny, maybe it isn't funny, anecdote, during Hurricane Sandy, when half of New Jersey was out of power, I have a person in our kind of electric vehicle group had figured out how to jerry-rig his electric vehicle to provide power to his house. And so the reality is you have all of this potential energy available. And so those can be used as potential holding vessels, let's say, for your solar energy overnight.
So and that's what Nancy was saying about these electric school buses. If
exactly.
they're not going to be discharging all their juice during the course of the day, they might be able to have enough stored to send it back to the grid.
And operate as generators.
Well, the other thing, too, is that the most people are charging their vehicles, whether it's a corporation or an individual, in the evening when the utilization is lower. The BPU, the Board of Public Utilities, is looking and working very hard on the allocation, who's going to be able to make those decisions, what role the utilities will have in determining the pricing and the storage and all of that. And I will say in regard to wind, New Jersey just issued its first large contract to Ørsted for the wind turbines. But wind turbines have been used in Europe and other countries way more. They're so far ahead of us, and they have saved a huge amount of money and definitely contributing to clean energy. We're at the very starting point, but we're going to rapidly pick up steam in that area.
Well, that is one of the questions.
It's happening, by the way, on the Northeast Coast, not just New Jersey.
Well, that is one of the questions they talk about, electric vehicles. Are you making more pollution by creating electricity than the cars themselves? And I think we've shown statistically and mathematically it's just not true. We're making electricity a lot cleaner than we are using it when we're using it in vehicles. So I think that's a great thing to do there. So the other part, of course, in terms of transformative stuff that's going to be happening with autonomous and electric vehicles that I know we talked about in our workforce development episode that we had, is about not only gas stations and service stations. I mean, let's even go back a couple, just a generation ago. Your gas station wasn't just a place to purchase gas and Slurpees. It was also a place to get your car serviced, okay? And you went there to get your oil change and your distributed cap change, and those type of technologies are now pretty much obsolete.
Right.
You're going to back to your dealer because your cars are so computerized and technologically superior. So you go to your dealer now to get your car repaired. You don't go to the gas station anymore for that. So we're going to see the changes in terms of fueling. That's obviously what's going to happen in terms of changes there. But I think the workforce itself is also going to change. When there's so many people whose job it is to drive, and we're even talking about the TNCs, the Uber Lyfts of the world, they are now providing that last mile transportation to people.
Right.
But they are also investing millions of dollars into having those vehicles not need drivers. And I think that's where some of the issues are going to be facing in terms of loss of those jobs and truck drivers and bus drivers and all kinds of different vehicles.
For sure, the most prevalent job for men in this country is truck driver, and if you do any driving on the turnpikes or major highways, you see the Walmart truck going in one direction and the Walmart truck passing going in the other direction. That kind of movement of goods is going to be, I'm sure, is going to be done with autonomous vehicles very soon.
Well, I say that they, I know they've already used a truck to deliver a truckload of beer from Boulder, Colorado, to Colorado City, and that's about 150 miles. And if they're willing to put that precious cargo on an autonomous vehicle, I figure it's going to be,
So as someone from the tech industry and somebody who's participated in some of this autonomous vehicle testing and evaluation, it's coming. It's just a matter of time.
For sure.
We can debate over whether it's going to be in 10 years or in 20 years, but it's coming. And Catherine, to your point, depending on who you talk to, I think it's 20-30% of the population gets their job from driving a vehicle, whether it be delivery drivers, Uber drivers. You name it. There's a lot of us that make a living off of driving a vehicle. And so a lot of you may have heard of Andrew Yang, who is running for president on the Democratic Party. He's actually a friend of mine. He's from New York City. And we had a conversation about this quite a few years ago. He feels that this is a potential huge disruptive event for safety, security, all of those sort of things for our country. And it –
positive or negative?
Potentially negative.
Mm-hmm.
And he's concerned about what will people do to make a living?
Yes.
There are counter arguments saying we used to be an agrarian society and everyone said, what will the farmers do? And then they all went to work in the factories.
But that took 100 years. We're talking about something that's happening very quickly.
We could be talking about autonomous tractors too. I mean, you know what I mean?
We already have. That's why you only need two farmers to maintain 300 acres or 3,000 acres.
We're producing more crops than ever with fewer people than ever.
That's right. So it cuts both ways, and there are going to be jobs for – at the very least, I'm telling all my kids to become developers because somebody's got to create the autonomous vehicles and program them. But they're saying with AI now, people are saying, some of these talking heads, there's not going to be developers in 20 years because the code will write itself. So what are we to do? One thing I believe is to have these conversations – to be forward thinking, to be a part of progress. You can't fight it. We're not going to argue that we're going to go back to horse and buggy just because this direction is too advanced. I think we're going to figure out what people are going to do and how people are going to provide value. If we need to have minimum basic income or universal basic income to keep a certain set of the population happy and fed and all of that, maybe that's the case. But these are conversations we need to have.
Well, there's nothing constant but change. So being able to be adaptive and to react to things in a positive way is so important. And I think when we look at our universities and innovation, the innovation corridor in the New Brunswick, in the Middlesex County area, I think, Catherine, your work with Einstein's Way is part of that ability to adapt to change and do it quickly and make a New Jersey a core of that innovation.
100% on board. This progress is going to happen. Is New Jersey going to be a thought leader in the space, or are we going to watch everyone else? And actually, the argument right now is on an international level. China is investing a lot more in moving down these roads. The EU has done fantastic work on the wind side. We can put our head in the sand and say we want coal plants and jobs for coal workers. It's not a political argument. It's just reality is going to take over at some point, and we have to be a part of progress.
Well, I think we've had an interesting dialogue and discussion today. I want to thank you all for joining us. I think this crystal ball approach is important for conversation, seeing what's going to happen, and it ties in kind of with, I think, the theme of the show is mobility matters, because mobility does matter in terms of every part of our life. That if we have problems with mobility, we have problems with moving ahead and even moving at all. So I think it's important. I want to thank Assemblywoman Pinkin for joining us. I want to thank Rashad Bajwa and Catherine Kish from Einstein's Alley. I also, as we're going to be wrapping up in another couple of minutes, I also want to take a few minutes to thank Beasley Media and WCTC 1450 for giving us the opportunity to do these 13 shows. It's been an interesting time for me. I've never done anything like this before, and I think I've learned a lot. I thank our guests, all 12 episodes, and today's 13th especially. I also want to take a second or two to thank Christina Fowler. She's the producer of this show. She's our marketing director at KMM. And she's the one who put the whole skeleton together to make this show work. And so I think it's important that we look at how KMM is trying to work hard to address some of these issues. Nobody knows what a Transportation Management Association necessarily does on a regular basis. But I think what we do is have dialogue, have conversations. We're teaching safety for children and adults. We're teaching transportation congestion management. But we're talking about future of transportation. And I think what we've done here today and these shows has really accomplished a lot. So thank you all for joining us. I really appreciate it. I'm just laughing about how we're trying to finish up this show with a really high note. And I think looking at the future and looking at the conversations we're having is how we're going to end up on a high note. And I think it's great. And I want to thank you once again. If you want to have anything else you want to add to say, thank you for joining us and appreciate the efforts you're working for the future of New Jersey.
I want to thank KMM for having us and specifically for having these sort of conversations, because outside of industry, a lot of these conversations are not happening or they're happening too late, and we're looking in our rearview mirror after progress has already happened. And if this kind of conversation where we keep looking forward and moving ourselves forward, I think New Jersey is at a perfect spot with Einstein's Alley and with Thomas Edison to be a part of this next step.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Thank you, Rashad.